Well, good afternoon and good evening once again. It's Thursday, June 15th, 2023. Once again, I'm not looking at the date. There it is. Okay, yeah, June 15th, confirmed. 1742 hours Eastern Daylight Time, Ward Green with you. And here today we've got a song. It's from 1977, the band Player, written by Peter Beckett, on the left in the picture. A gentleman with fairly long hair, as indeed many musicians did have in those days and still do, and as his fellow band members also had. Ron Moss, second from the left. John Friesen, second from the right on drums, with Ron Moss being on bass and backup vocals, and J.C. Crowley on the right on keyboards and backup vocals. So this song was number one on the charts in Canada on the RPM Top Singles chart, and it was also number one on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100. So this is a big hit. And that was 1977-78 for the chart, because it came out late in 1977. This is the song, Baby Come Back.
Just can't live.
Wow. Well, I'd like to correct something about what I said concerning when we moved from 15 Faraday in Deep River, 15 Faraday Crescent, where we lived for the first, well, actually we lived, first of all, on Troy Street, trying to think what number, six, I think, Troy, in Deep River. It wasn't a very long street either, but we lived there first, but then we moved to 15 Faraday, and I was there, I was in that house when I was 6 years old. I'm not sure exactly when we moved there, come to think of it, but we moved when I was about 9 or 10, and it's actually nine, I think I was 9 years old when we first moved to 21 Frontenac, because, and that was grade five, and the reason I think that is because I can remember riding my bike down to the other school, and I only changed schools in grade six, so that must have been grade five, I know it was. So I was in grade five, and it was the summer that we moved there, or, well, perhaps we moved in the winter, that's possible, but I remember the first summer we had ants in that house, a lot of ants that came in, but ants only, it's sort of a seasonal thing, they might come in and then they disappear, you know, which I've learned living here, but my mother didn't know that, so when she saw these ants coming in, it was put out the ant traps, you know, the ant bait or whatever, but that's what we, I remember that from Frontenac Crescent in Deep River, that was where we moved to the bigger house, and I was in grade six shortly thereafter, but that would have been, so we moved there probably in the winter, that's right, so I had the springtime of school in grade five, and that was the same year. So that was that year then. Let me think, that would have been that year. What year did I say that was? 1967, right? Yeah. So 1967, I was, my birthday's in January on the 10th of the month, so I'm pretty well the same age all year long. So I was 10 years old going to school in grade five and then in grade six, the same calendar year. So that's what it was. So we did move in 67, but we could have, it might have, I think it was in January we might have moved, actually. Possibly. It's possible. Or we could have moved in the spring and that, whenever it was, the ants came at some point in the first year anyway. And so that was 1967. That was Louis Armstrong song, which we had the What a Wonderful World yesterday. But this song was from 1977, 10 years later, when I would have been going into third year of university and staying in that house on 96 Division Street in Kingston. I would have been in that house when this song came out, actually, in 1977. Baby Come Back. Since it would take a whole article to really get into this, talking about the Wild Road article, part 2, chapter 11, paragraph 11, our goal here is simply to highlight what appear to be the key points of interest in a preliminary way. The Parian marble, or what Newton calls, quote, unquote, the marbles, says that Teucer came to Cyprus 7 years after Troy fell. And Apollodorus relates that Cinyras was ejected from Cyprus by Teucer with some assistance from Dido's father in the days of Dido or Elissa, at a time just preceding her brother Pygmalion's reign at Tyre, which preceded Dido's flight to Carthage by about 6 years. In this version, that is Apollodorus, Newton says Teucer came, quote, from the war, end quote, not saying whether during or after it. The account of Josephus, in brackets, against Appian, 1.18, that'll be chapter 1 or book 1, section 8, sorry, it's section 18, if I said something different, it's not correct. It's so book one or chapter one, whatever that one is, I think it's book one probably, Section 18 of Against Appian, Josephus gives 127 years for the time from the founding, quote-unquote founding. The Greek word here used means building and also metaphorically founding, of Solomon's temple, the founding of Solomon's temple, until Dido ran away. 127 years, which is simply 1014 minus 127 in our chronology, and that is 887 BCE in the genealogy when Dido runs away. But that in our chronology also happens to be year 18 of Shalmaneser, which is very important, because year 18 of Shalmaneser the third, it is, it's Shalmaneser the third. In his year 18, there was an important event where he exacted a tribute on all of his subjects, and this is the time when other things transpired in the way that we see for the case of the reign of Pygmalion. At the time of Pygmalion, there were events that happened which would coincide with some time either at the beginning of his reign, which we originally believed, which I originally believed, or 7 years into his reign. He began to reign at the age of 9 years old. So Pygmalion, if this is 7 years into his reign, then he was 16 years old, right? A rebellious teenager, we might think, possibly, is one way to look at that. And so he was, at that time, responsible for the death of somebody as well, which would be hard to imagine if he were only 9 years old. So it's interesting, but we can study this, but it's too much to get into today, so we're not going to cover it right now. But there was an important thing that was a tribute had to be paid in the year 18 of Shalmaneser the third. That would be in our chronology exactly 887 BCE, give or take a little bit, you know, few months or something, possibly. So we could be wrong maybe by 1 year, but not much, if that even. But Dido runs away at the time of this tribute because there was a murder, right? I believe that was when her husband was, or her husband-to-be was murdered by her brother, and he had stolen the money. That's what I think happened. So that the tribute money was probably stolen would make perfect sense here. That's why he was murdered by the young king Pygmalion at the same time, and all of this coincides with Dido running away. If that were year 7 of her brother, then he began to rule in 994, or 894 BCE. In other words, 7 years before 887, since the BCE years run backwards. But that still gives time for Dido to run away and found Carthage by the year 883. And we know the dedication of Carthage is said to have been made in 870 BCE, which is 1014 minus 144. And it can be calculated by the account in Josephus, right, in Against Appian. However, the 870, of course, could be transmuted to 880 if we had, or translated, if we began the building of the temple in 1024, like we were saying earlier in the article here, if we consider that the 10 years of preparation for the building were included in the building of the temple, then the founding may have been considered as having begun in 1024 BCE. So that would bring us to 880 for the dedication of Carthage, which is not very different from the time of 883, which appears to be the beginning. 880 and 883, they're not too different. All of this, therefore, coincides and thereby coincides very well. But it's too much to get into today. There's a lot to discuss here in paragraph 11. We're not going to get into all of it right now. So our proverb for today is, little children, Proverbs 27, verse 11. Be wise, my son, and make my heart rejoice, that I may make a reply to him that is taunting me. Probably the hope of all fathers for their children. Leviticus 15. And Jehovah continued to speak to Moses and Aaron, saying, speak to the sons of Israel, and you must say to them, in case any man has a running discharge occur from his genital organ, his discharge is unclean, and this will become his uncleanness by his discharge. Whether his genital organ has flowed with a running discharge or his genital organ is obstructed from his running discharge, it is his uncleanness. Any bed upon which the one having a running discharge may lie down will be unclean, and any article upon which he may sit will be unclean. And a man who may touch his bed should wash his garments, and he must bathe in water and be unclean until the evening. And whoever sits upon the article upon which the one having a running discharge was sitting should wash his garments, and he must bathe in water and be unclean until the evening. And whoever touches the flesh of the one having a running discharge should wash his garments, and he must bathe in water and be unclean until the evening. And in the case of the one who has a running discharge spitting upon someone clean, he must in that case wash his garments and bathe in water and be unclean until the evening. And any saddle upon which the one having a running discharge was riding will be unclean. And anyone touching anything that happens to be under him will be unclean until the evening. And he who carries them will wash his garments, and he must bathe in water and be unclean until the evening. And anyone whom the one having a running discharge might touch when he has not rinsed his hands in water must then wash his garments and bathe in water and be unclean until the evening. And an earthenware vessel that the one having a running discharge might touch should be smashed, and any wooden vessel should be rinsed with water. Now, in case the one having a running discharge would become clean from his running discharge, he must then count for himself 7 days for his purification, and he must wash his garments and bathe his flesh in running water, and he must be clean. And on the eighth day he should take for himself 2 turtle doves or 2 young pigeons, and he must come before Jehovah to the entrance of the tent of meeting and give them to the priest, and the priest must offer them, the one as a sin offering and the other as a burnt offering. And the priest must make atonement for him before Jehovah concerning his running discharge. Now, in case a man has an emission of semen go out from him, he must then bathe all his flesh in water and be unclean until the evening. And any garment and any skin upon which the emission of semen gets to be must be washed with water and be unclean until the evening. As for a woman with whom a man may lie down with an emission of semen, they must bathe in water and be unclean until the evening. And in case a woman is having a running discharge and her running discharge in her flesh proves to be blood, she should continue 7 days in her menstrual impurity, and anyone touching her will be unclean until the evening. And anything upon which she may lie down in her menstrual impurity will be unclean, and everything upon which she may sit will be unclean. And anyone touching her bed should wash his garments, and he must bathe in water and be unclean until the evening. And anyone touching any article upon which she was sitting should wash his garments, and he must bathe in water and be unclean until the evening. And if it was upon the bed or upon another article that she was sitting, by his touching it he will be unclean until the evening. And if a man lies down with her at all, and her menstrual impurity comes to be upon him, he must then be unclean 7 days, and any bed upon which he might lie down will be unclean. As for a woman, in case the running discharge of her blood should be flowing many days, when it is not the regular time of her menstrual impurity, or in case she should have a flow longer than her menstrual impurity, all the days of her unclean running discharge will prove as in the days of her menstrual impurity. She is unclean. Any bed upon which she may lie any of the days of her running discharge will become for her as the bed of her menstrual impurity, and any article upon which she may sit will be unclean like the uncleanness of her menstrual impurity. and anyone touching them will be unclean, and he must wash his garments and bathe in water and be unclean until the evening. However, if she has become clean from her running discharge, she must also count for herself 7 days, and afterwards she will be clean. And on the eighth day, she should take for herself 2 turtle doves or 2 young pigeons, and she must bring them to the priest at the entrance of the tent of meeting, and the priest must make the one a sin offering and the other a burnt offering, and the priest must make atonement for her before Jehovah concerning her unclean running discharge. And you must keep the sons of Israel separate from their uncleanness, that they may not die in their uncleanness for the defiling of my tabernacle, which is in their midst. This is the law about the man having a running discharge, and the man from whom an emission of semen may go out so that he becomes unclean by it, and the menstruating woman in her uncleanness, and anyone who has a flow of his running discharge, whether a male or a female, and whether a man who lies down with an unclean woman. And that's the end of Leviticus 15. Now, Mark 15, little children. Now, going back to Mark 14, the end of Mark 14, is this where Jesus broke down? Peter broke down. Peter broke down. Jesus didn't break down. Peter broke down and wept bitterly because he had betrayed Jesus 3 times, denied him 3 times, that is, or disowned him 3 times, as it says here in the 1984 New World Translation, the reference version. And Peter broke down and gave way to weeping. And immediately at dawn, the chief priests with the older men and the scribes, even the whole Sanhedrin, conducted a consultation, and they bound Jesus and led him off and handed him over to Pilate. Pilate, as we know, was the governor of Judea. So Pilate put the question to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" In answer, he said to him, "You yourself say it." But the chief priests proceeded to accuse him of many things. Now Pilate began questioning him again, saying, "Have you no reply to make? See how many charges they are bringing against you." But Jesus made no further answer, so that Pilate began to marvel. Well, from festival to festival, he used to release to them one prisoner whom they petitioned for. At the time, there was the so-called Barabbas in bonds with the seditionists, who in their sedition had committed murder. So the crowd came on up and started to make petition according to what he used to do for them. Pilate responded to them, saying, "Do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews?" For he was aware that because of envy, the chief priests had handed him over. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd to have him release Barabbas to them instead. Again, in reply, Pilate was saying to them, "What then shall I do with him whom you call king of the Jews?" Once more they cried out, "Impale him!" But Pilate went on to say to them, "Why? What bad thing did he do?" Still they cried out all the more, "Impale him!" At that, Pilate, wishing to satisfy the crowd, released Barabbas to them, and after having Jesus whipped, he handed him over to be impaled. The soldiers now led him off into the courtyard, that is, into the governor's palace. Pilate was the governor, and they called the whole body of troops together, and they decked him with purple and braided a crown of thorns and put it on him. And they started greeting him, "Good day, you king of the Jews." Also, they would hit him on the head with a reed and spit upon him, and bending their knees, they would do obeisance to him. Finally, when they had made fun of him, they stripped him of the purple and put his outer garments upon him, and they led him out to impale him. Also, they impressed into service a passerby, a certain Simon of Cyrene, coming from the country, the father of Alexander and Rufus, that he should lift up his torture stake. So they brought him to the place Golgotha, which means, when translated, skull place. Here they tried to give him wine drugged with myrrh, but he would not take it. And they impaled him and distributed his outer garments by casting the lot over them as to who takes what. It was now the third hour, and they impaled him, and the inscription of the charge against him was written above, quote, the King of the Jews, unquote. Moreover, they impaled two robbers with him, one on his right and one on his left. And those going by would speak abusively to him, wagging their heads and saying, Bah, you would-be thrower down of the temple and builder of it in 3 days' time. Save yourself by coming down off the torture stake. In like manner, also the chief priests were making fun among themselves with the scribes and saying, Others he saved, himself he cannot save. Let the Christ, the King of Israel, now come down off the torture stake, that we may see and believe. Even those impaled together with him were reproaching him. When it became the sixth hour, a darkness fell over the whole land until the ninth hour. And at the ninth hour, that's 3 PM, Jesus called out with a loud voice, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, which means, when translated, my God, why have you forsaken me? And some of those standing near, on hearing it, began to say, See, he's calling Elijah. But a certain one ran, soaked a sponge with sour wine, put it on a reed, and began giving him a drink, saying, Let him be. Let us see whether Elijah comes to take him down. But Jesus let out a loud cry and expired, and the curtain of the sanctuary was rent in two from top to bottom. Now when the army officer that was standing by with him in view saw he had expired under these circumstances, he said, Certainly this man was God's son. There were also women viewing from a distance, among them Mary Magdalene, as well as Mary the mother of James the Less and of Joses, and Salome, who used to accompany him and minister to him when he was in Galilee, and many other women who had come up together with him to Jerusalem. Now, as it was already late in the afternoon, and since it was preparation, that is, the day before the Sabbath, which would be for the Sadducees, of course, their Sabbath, and their Passover, so the preparation was for the Passover, there came Joseph of Arimathea, a reputable member of the council, who also himself was waiting for the kingdom of God. He took courage to go in before Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. But Pilate wondered whether he was already dead, and summoning the army officer, he asked him whether he had already died. So after making certain from the army officer, he granted the corpse to Joseph. Accordingly, he bought fine linen and took him down, wrapped him in the fine linen, and laid him in a tomb which was quarried out of a rock mass. And he rolled up a stone to the door of the memorial tomb. We know later the soldiers sealed it so that it would be known if the seal was broken, because they wanted to make it secure, the tomb. That was done by the Romans, though. But Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joses, continued looking at where he had been laid. And that's the end of Mark chapter 15. That concludes our study for today. I went out today. I didn't get groceries, but I went and picked up a very important delivery, which was part of the inheritance from my late mother. So that's all for today. What am I going to say? I need to conclude the study, as always. I mean, I love you. I love you always. But I know it really is important that I tell you that I love you. And I hope you enjoyed the study. And thank you for watching. Hopefully we'll do another one very soon, like tomorrow, hopefully. But in my behalf, and we've studied Jesus, we know he is a very marvelous, wonderful person. He's also wonderful counselor. Wonderful counselor was one of the Messiah's titles that would be given to him. I want to say something to those in the Muslim faith that don't believe in the resurrection, of course. This is something that where they believe that Jesus did not actually die, but that he was just raised up from some unconscious state. You know, it's absolutely vital that this death be believed for the payment of the sin of Adam, but also that the resurrection be believed because the resurrection is the basis of our hope in everlasting life. Very important, because many people have died, and without the resurrection, they will be lost forever. So this is a very important concept. And Jesus could not have resurrected himself, because in order to truly die, you know, you have to be, you know, lost. And so you must be resurrected by another agent, a living agent. Like in this case, Jehovah resurrected Jesus. But we haven't come to that part yet in the story. But that's how we know that they're not equal. You know, Jehovah and Jesus, they're not the same person. They're not equal. They're not part of a trinity. That's another thing we do know from this sequence of events and from the Bible, which is God's word. It's not comparable to the Quran. They're not the same book at all, okay? It's important to note that. And if we don't believe in the resurrection of Jesus, and we don't believe that he's the Messiah, then we're not a Christian. It's that simple. That's not Christianity unless you believe that Jesus was the Messiah. Okay. So, I love you. Once again, I love you. I love you. I love you. It's been wonderful to talk to you and share with you what I did today. In my behalf, it's Star and Cammy saying bye for now.